This is the one with lady soldiers.
And large Jabba-like toad aliens.
And budget Daleks that for some reason everyone agrees should be called Chumblies.
It's called Galaxy 4.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space,
counting Daleks, Thal and Ood, and the Cybertronic race.
Some Taurans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales.
Who back when?
Reviewing all of who there is.
Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who Back When.
Hello, and welcome to episode C18 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin.
I am the Rawmeister.
Yes, you are.
still with the Rawmeister. This is my third episode. We haven't come up with a new nickname yet.
Yeah, well, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, if you have a different suggestion for what the Rawmeister should be called, feel free to send it in.
I feel like Jack's nickname evolved. Maybe mine should too.
The Rawhammer.
The Rawhammer.
Rawshack.
The Rawshack Tech. Something, yeah.
I like that. Well, today we are reviewing Galaxy 4, classic Hartnell episode, and most of it is missing.
Yeah, you're going with classic.
That is a fair comment. It's really not the best of episodes. It's what, sorry?
Is it really possible for this to be classic?
It is part of Classic Who. Technically, it is a classic episode.
Yeah. Does that mean every episode of Classic Who is by default a classic?
Okay, all right, fine. Allow me to rephrase. Like, I apologize.
Is that like everything Shakespeare ever wrote would be a classic, including like his school homework? I'm being unduly mean there, by the way. I'm not. That's not a commentary on this episode. That was just more of an observation.
Fair enough. But this serial, it does suck massive gonads. It is a... Well, I thought so anyway. I'm not a big fan of this one.
I tend to agree.
Should be said, most of it is missing. Oh, sorry, I cut you off there. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, was there anything in particular you felt let it down, or should we get to that?
Okay, just some bullet points before we jump into Beeskow and all that stuff. Yes, incredible sexism, a terrible plot, the worst time management ever in episode 4, and overall, just like, it's budget Daleks. Oh, no, there are so many things to pick apart here. Actually, hang on.
Time management go on the Doctor's CV.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
I see what you did there. Before we go any further with Galaxy 4, I really just want to give a massive podcast high five / shout out to one of our listeners and regular contributors, the Sinister Super Spy himself, at Sinister Super Spy on Twitter. That's super without any vowels. Hope all is well, dude. Kyle is an air traffic controller with the Canadian F-18 Hornets. Battalion? Is that the right word? I'm not sure.
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah? Just about to rocket off to Romania. Kyle, have some delicious sarmale and sauerkraut on my behalf, and you know what? Stay safe, stay in touch, and continue being an awesome dude, Meister. So, shall we jump into a Beeskow?
Let's do it. The Doctor, Vicky and Stephen materialise maybe 2 feet from a god-awful map painting of a desolate landscape, deduce that there's no life on the planet, and then immediately realise that there's plenty.
Turns out this otherwise barren land plays host to 2 separate groups of aliens, the all-female Draven and the Jabba-like Rill, the latter of whom have mini Dalek-like robot adjutants that shoot poison fire powder.
Both parties were engaged in some sort of firefight and crashed onto the planet, and now the Doc and Co are caught in the crossfire. Blam!
Total freaking kablamatron. Beeskow over. Hope you enjoyed that. Okie dokie. Shall we start off with episode 1? This is a 4-episode story arc, by the way.
Thank God it was only 4 episodes.
Yeah. Episode 1, 66.6% of which are missing.
Yeah.
Totally missing. Oh, wait, hang on before we start. I don't know which version you saw. Did you see the one that is actually introduced by, what's his face? Peter Purves?
I did, yes. Nice to see he's still keeping busy. Well, it looks like he introduced that a while ago, actually.
Yeah, it did.
Video quality.
What did you think of his intro?
Actually, I'm mainly remembering the outro. He did an outro on my version as well.
Oh, shit. I did not see the outro. Awesome. You're going to have to regale me on that one.
It might have been the same thing. I can't remember. But I definitely remember an outro. I thought he was maybe a little heavy with his praise over the glorious special effects or whatever it was he was on.
Oh, really? There are mainly two things that I remember of the intro that was included in mine, which were, number one, he said, essentially, this was an episode that was originally written for Barbara, Ian, and Susan, and yeah, he got stuck with a lot of the Barbara lines.
Yeah.
And number two, he says very clearly, this is not one of his favorite episodes. Like, he basically just slags it off as, oh, it's, you know, it's kind of one of those filler shit serials.
Oh, it's very possible that the outro I saw might have been the intro to the next episode.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because I didn't really pay it a lot of attention by the end, so maybe that's what he was, yeah.
Fair enough.
The next one is one of his favourite episodes, I'm not sure.
Oh, interesting. I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, but did you think it was particularly noticeable that it wasn't really written for him?
Not really. I probably wouldn't have thought of it had I not seen that intro.
Yeah, I agree.
But then having actually seen that intro, there was one point, I think it's in my notes somewhere as well, where they first, spoiler alert, when they encountered the Drawin, it seemed as though they had just ham-fisted this one line in for Steve Meister, just to like indicate this is a dude's line, this is not
I
a chick's
so
line.
I know exactly which line you mean, because I have something to say about it when it comes.
Yeah. Out of nowhere, it's just like, the line I'm thinking is something to the effect of, aren't they just lovely? Or like, lovely looking women.
Was it? It seems you put a pretty attractive stop to this thing.
Oh, maybe that is it. I can't remember now. It's in my notes.
Because I wrote that down and wrote, Stephen needs flirting lessons.
Like it. Okay, dokie. Shall we start off with episode one?
Yeah.
What's episode one called? I can't even remember.
I've got 400 Dawns written down. But
bingo, that's the one, yeah.
Why was it called 400 Dawns? Is there a reason for that?
Because they had been on the planet for 400 Dawns. Like 400 days earlier, they had had their fight and crashed on the planet. Okay, whatever. Right. 400 Dawns. Gang materializes. Go for it, dude.
So, yeah. Well, as you rightly point out, the set design is perhaps not the greatest we've ever seen.
True.
I probably enjoyed this episode, this portion of the episode, a lot more than the rest because, hey, we had actual moving images at this point, choppy as they might have been.
Oh, we do. Yeah, you're right. Just a little bit.
Yeah, the first, it was like 20 minutes worth, I think, although it wasn't all complete. I think there were stills in there.
Okay.
Definitely the very beginning where Stephen's getting his hair cut for some reason. I couldn't see what was going on there at all.
Okay. Well, for me, this was largely still images for the first roughly 15 minutes, and then it goes into live action.
But okay, maybe there was a bit missing from the beginning of mine.
Either way, the gang materializes on a planet that they say is completely quiet, and not for the first time, but very nearly the first time ever, the doc checks the oxygen levels, checks radiation levels, like basically just scans the entire planet and deduces, like, it's safe, it's fine, like, we can totally go outside. And we will have a break. At which point, 2 minutes into episode one, he fucks up the first line of the serial.
As a matter of fact, I think we should get some long-deserved, unnerved peace.
I completely didn't catch that.
But they check the scanner, they see what it looks like out there, and then all of a sudden, like they basically say, okay, it's completely empty, but then all of a sudden, what looks like a blind Roomba turns up. It's freaking budget Dalek. It looks like a budget, like a Dalek had a transporter accident with one of the Dustbusters on the web planet.
I wrote it down as curvaceous Dalek.
Oh, sexy.
And then also Roma, which I think we've talked about Romans before, possibly in a previous episode.
Romans?
Yeah.
Do you reckon there was a person inside?
They were quite small.
They were small, yeah, but...
small person.
Could be.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know, because when I was watching this, I was thinking, like, wait, hang on. So, I mean, there are things happening with it. Like, there's an antenna that pops out, and it has these shitty little claw hands, and a gun and whatever. Like, that's a lot to be able to mechanize and also, pop on a, I guess, remote control of some description.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway... this thing turns up, and it is referred to as a Chumbly.
A Chumbly.
Yeah, Vicky decides to call it a Chumbly.
And everyone else in the episode appears to agree with her, even the people who made the fucking
thing. Yeah, even the real start referring to it as a Chumbly. Is it, but what?
It's just an inherently apt name for it.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know if Chumbly, I'm assuming it's some sort of reference to pop culture. What is a Chumbly?
I don't think it is. I don't think it's a real word at all. I think it's just a word that Vicky made up that sort of...
Oh, really?
It's not onomatopoeic exactly, because that's referring to sound, but whatever the sort of visual equivalent of that would be.
Yeah.
I get what she means, but I don't know if I can explain it.
Because it looks like this sort of slightly rotund robot that's kind of just happily going along, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it is weirdly descriptive, but it's hard to say why, but I think it's just its movement is kind of sort of, I don't know.
Who knows? Anyway.
This is really hard to, I get what she means, but it is also, I would say, a stupid name, and was responsible for me having a particular song stuck in my head for most of this episode.
Was it the song by Chumbawamba?
No, but that was almost better, I think. Hang on, we're not getting away without putting the song in this.
Okay, all right, put in the song. I don't know what this is. You mentioned this before we started recording.
Yeah, I think this was actually towards the beginning of the 90s. There was this horrible Saturday morning kids show called The Junglies. And okay. It has a god-awful theme song, which insert here, I guess. Enjoyed that horrible song, which was going around in my head over and over again. You think they had higher expectations for what the popularity of these creatures? Because I'm guessing they haven't gone down in.
Well, given that it's a lost episode
for me in Whovian history, rather than Fami.
Yeah, well, I guess had this not been a mostly lost serial, then perhaps they would have been bigger, you know. But they're not reoccurring. They don't turn up again, as far as I know.
Fuck for that. Oh, I don't know. I just feel like they tried to ram the Chumblies down our throats a little bit.
Hey.
These are going to be the new Daleks, but they're cute Ewoks. Yeah, do you get those, like, meant to be some kind of...
Maybe, so it's like this...
intention there,
something
like,
that the kids can maybe relate to.
Yeah, so they gave them, like, a cutesy name and...
Maybe, but then again, the Chumblies are freaking vicious killing machines as well. Hang on, dude, let's get back to the plot, and people will find out what metal monsters these things are. So, the gang, they're amazed, exit the TARDIS to check it out, and... Just one tiny little point here. There are three stars in the sky, and the doc stops and says it reminds him of the planet Zira. I'm adding this in without any kind of knowledge about what that is, just in case maybe at some point later on, or possibly JD wants to add a comment on the website, potentially that will, you know, be picked up on later on. Anyway, they are ambushed by the Chumbawamba, and Steve makes a failed attempt at bludgeoning it. Let's put a pin in that, because later on it is very easy to bludgeon these things.
Yeah.
And then the doc assumes that it's probably blind, but detecting their movements through some sort of heat wave. Yeah. Meanwhile, this thing is making noises like a submarine, so would sonar not be the logical assumption? It's constantly going like... Boop, 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 boop,
boop, boop. Constantly, as in that noise is pretty much all the way through the entire serial.
Yeah.
Very much. Would this be the bit where the Chumbly gets its penis out?
Yes, it is.
Because that's what I...
The Chumbly blasts the shit out of a shrubbery to demonstrate its power and then takes them away.
Yeah, I thought that was vaguely biblical.
Yeah.
I was expecting the Doctor to do with Moses, kind of, or something. And this is when the Dravens turn up, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And they take out the Chumbly with a net, which seemed a little easy.
Yeah, these two ladies, they're just sort of... Gorilla Dave style watching from afar and disable it by throwing a net over it, which it turns out is then stuck to it because it's magnetic or something. Either way, like throwing a net on it is all you need to disable it.
Yeah. You'd think there'd be some other magnetic items somewhere in the TARDIS that you could utilize to just take these guys out.
That's true. But also, to be fair, they didn't know that there was going to be an altercation anyway, like in the first place.
I meant later on in the episode, really.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, that is a fair point. But, all right, so these...
It does seem like the magnet is what does the trick.
Yeah, I know. This is also not picked up on at all, not one single time throughout the entire rest of the serial. Anyway, so these Drawin, they come from the planet Drahwa, or Drawa, in Galaxy 4. Let's just make a point here. This entire serial is called Galaxy 4.
That was literally the most catchy name they could come up with after they rejected Chumblee's.
Yeah, but the fact that these women, these Drawin, are from Galaxy 4, that is the only reference to Galaxy 4 in the entire serial. This serial does not even take place in Galaxy 4. It takes place on some other planet.
I'd like to have seen their shortlist of potential titles before they...
I haven't read it yet, but I did see that one of our listeners has provided us with a short list of potential titles for the serial.
Oh, I look forward to reading
it. Yeah, as do I. Okay, anyway, let's move on with the plot. Their mission, these Drawin, they were there on a mission to rescue the troop from the machines, from the Chumbawambas, who would otherwise have taken them to the other alien race on the planet, namely the Rill. So instead, now they're rescued by the Drawin, they're taken to the leader, Marga.
Quick point about the Dravins, by the way.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be really beautiful, right?
I guess so, yeah. Sorry, we haven't even stopped to describe them.
Do you think that? I got the impression they were supposed to be stunningly beautiful, but...
I think they're more sort of Amazonian in the actual sense of Amazonian, as in, like, they're not Wonder Woman-style beauties. They are these soldier women. They're these insanely muscular soldiers, strong and powerful. And in this case, it turns out completely dumb.
I get insanely muscular from watching them, but...
But aren't they meant to be super strong or something?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, they just seem really angular, but they're meant to, like, this is not in any way meant to sound sexist, but these women are dumb. And it turns out they are actually dumb. Like, okay, we're going to get to that later on, but they were made without intelligence, just with brute force and a killing spirit or something.
It's slightly brought to mind Spock's brain.
A little bit. Yeah, you're right. The way that they move and their mannerisms in general. Yes. Okie dokie. So they're going to take them to their leader, Marga. Doc goes, yeah, you know, no thanks. That's totally fine. We learn that the Rill, they are these murderous creatures. They killed another Drawin already. And the Doc basically just wants to go and meet them instead. But at that point, more Roombas arrive and the Drawin try to get the net off the one that's been turned off, essentially, by the addition of metal or magnets or whatever. However, these bipeds with opposable thumbs and elbows and a considerable height advantage over the Roombas don't manage and have to abandon the mesh. Meanwhile, one of the chums, who, by the way, are essentially wheelie medicine balls, produces a tiny little claw and pulls the mesh clean off, no probs. Right?
Yeah.
And at that point, the one that had been turned off, the second the net is off it, it just turns back on again.
Well, I mean, I think you're underestimating the power of magnets there. I mean, they can seriously disable you, but...
Yeah, sure.
You're fine.
No, that is very true. No, I'm sure I read that somewhere. But then... But what pisses me off is that this thing that has this shitty little claw manages to pull off a net that is magnetically attached to another chimichanga with no problems whatsoever.
Really strong electrified magnet or something.
Maybe. I have no idea.
Although that wasn't disabling the other... never mind. That's just... he had a glove, maybe.
Maybe. No, you're right. Shit. Why did that not turn... No, you're totally right! This pisses me off! Why did it not turn off the other one? Oh, god damn it. Alright, fine. Okay. So, we're now treated to some more actual existing footage as the troop arrives at the Drawin ship. Pretty much only for the Doc to not be very impressed. He essentially just goes, well, this is just a piece of garbage. Like, you fly around in this shit? So they meet Marga, who explains that the planet will explode in a fortnight, and that they now need to capture the Rill ship to escape, or they will all die, because their ship, the Drawin ship, has been completely just demolished, right? It doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
And we get a little bit of backstory. Turns out the Drawin, or according to Marga anyway, the Drawin came looking for a planet to colonize, because their own planet, Drahwa, in Galaxy 4 or whatever, we will never hear of Galaxy 4 again. Their own planet, Drahwa, was overpopulated. So the Stevemeister gets a total hard on and goes, all women? And Marga doesn't follow, so the Doc genuinely, physically, with his hand, indicates her vagina, as in like, oh yes, you know, like this. And he just goes, you know, with one of those.
That's something that needs to be turned into a GIF.
Yes, you're right. Anyway, screenshot on the website, people. The Doc pointing out a vagina.
Living up to the name Peter Firbs as ever.
Yeah. It's pretty good as well, because the Doc is sitting down, so he's pretty much at groin level with her. It's fantastic. I mean, he might as well be making a V with his fingers and, like, sticking his tongue between it. Okay, so we also learn that the men are just sort of slaves on Drawa.
Now, this seemed like a concept which might have been an interesting road to follow.
I know.
Did.
You're absolutely right. That could have been, it could have been an interesting story about gender roles. They could have added a little bit of actual substance to this plot, but unfortunately it's not really touched upon. We do learn something about the Chiquitas, the other Drawin soldiers, the fembots, basically. They're not actual, like, living beings either. They're not androids, but they were somehow artificially created to be soldiers. This is where we find that out. However, not worth a soundbite, but Marga says the Chiquitas aren't what she'd call human. I've made this note in other episodes on the podcast and other reviews that sometimes humanoid aliens will refer to each other as humans, which is, like, totally incorrect. They would never do that. She would go, well, she isn't exactly what I'd call a Drawin, but no, she says human. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So now Marga has literally just finished explaining absolutely everything, and then Steve, just to make sure, summarizes her entire soliloquy immediately afterwards.
Well, I had to give him some lines.
Guess so. Anyway, a chum arrives, tries to transmit a message, and is attacked by the Drawin soldiers, but shortly thereafter doesn't give a damn. Like, the guns, their laser blaster rifle thingies, have no effect on the chimichangas whatsoever. However, a net does, and Steve, just to put this into context, cannot punch it with, like, a stick or whatever it was he tried to do. Like, he cannot bludgeon these robots. Well, we're coming up to the end of episode one here. Marga won't let the entire group return to the TARDIS together. They want to go back, basically have a look-see at the planet, like, just the scientific stats, see if it's actually true that it's going to blow up in 2 weeks' time, and so on and so forth. But Marga goes, because we can't guarantee your safety, you can't all go there together. This makes no sense whatsoever. So what, like, would she be able to guarantee the safety of just two of them? No, she can't. But essentially, very obviously, she just wants to keep a hostage.
Yeah.
So Vicky agrees to stay behind. Again, what? Why would she do that? So Doc and Steve Meister head off. Meanwhile, Chimichanga is trying to get into the TARDIS, even fires upon it, and lets its controller know in some way, like, sends off a message with this little antenna thingy that it was, I'm assuming, sending a message saying that it was impossible to get into the TARDIS, and then leaves. And then the Doc bows down and gives himself a nice hand job for being such a clever guy, because he says... Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not sure if I remember this. My notes here at the end of episode one are a little bit hazy, to be honest. But if I'm not mistaken, the Doc and Steve, they see the Chimichanga trying to get into the TARDIS, and the Doc just goes, oh, he's never going to get through my force field. He's basically like, I am the fucking man. I set up the best force field in the world. Chumbawamba doesn't stand a chance. And when it doesn't, he just starts jerking it. Pretty sure.
Well, this is part of the reason we were stuck with still images for this episode. destroyed that scene for us.
Such a shame. I would love to watch a Hartnell porno. Anyway, so they pop in the TARDIS and they consult the astral mapper, which, if memory serves, is what they picked up at the Space Museum.
Ah.
Bingo bongo. And the astral mapper tells them that the planet doesn't have a fortnight. Instead, it's destined to kablamo into oblivion in 2 days' time instead. Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Blam. End of episode one. Episode two.
All right. No cops on episode one as a whole, or do we just push through?
So far, okay, for being an episode that was... I mean, all right, so we had the last 6 or 7 minutes were perfectly intact. We could see and, quote-unquote, enjoy them, right? It started off mainly with still images, then it went into live action. For an episode that is only a third intact, not that bad, I thought. Like, I mean, it's okay. It's pretty stupid, but it does set up all these things. At this point, you're thinking, okay, so you've got the weird gender roles presented by the Drawin, clearly characterized. Just designed by men, by the way, like, massive sexist character development there. And you've got this elusive alien race, the Rill. We still haven't seen them, but they control robots that are fucking Dalek-like. Yeah, I'm going to say, like, I kind of enjoyed and was looking forward to seeing the rest of the serial at this point. Okie dokie, Kablamatron, episode 2, The Trap of Steel. We start off with a Chattanooga dropping off what looks like a picture of sangria by the door of the TARDIS, but it's actually a bomb. Bomb, not bomb. And this Chom-Chom that is supposedly mega advanced and has a radio antenna and freaking everything does not detonate it by remote control. Instead, it holds up two rubbish little wires and pushes them together.
It's like a foolhardy way to try and detonate something.
It really is. It looks like a child playing with explosives.
Yeah. It's almost as smart as, Doc Brown pushes the cable together right when they're getting hit by lightning.
Yes.
I feel like the Chumblies shouldn't have come off too well from that.
So. There's almost like a cartoonish quality to that as well. It's like, yeah. Check this out. Anyway, it does not work. It tries to blow up the TARDIS or blow open the TARDIS two or three times, but everything just sort of shakes, rattles and rolls inside the TARDIS. And I think the Doc makes a Guy Fawkes joke, which is really inappropriate. Anyway, they head back to the Drawin after the Chimichangas left, and the Doc and Steve Meister arrive outside the Drawin ship, at which point the Doctor produces an actual down-to-earth, honest-to-God screwdriver. Not a sonic screwdriver, a regular screwdriver, an analog screwdriver. And scratches the outer hull of the spaceship with it, because apparently this is how you conduct scientific research. You just scratch it with a screwdriver. Anyway,
as to what he was supposed to be doing there.
Well, we get back to it later on, because he wanted. Yeah. It was like his way of proving that it was a weak hull or something. Like, yeah. you could basically destroy the spaceship with a screwdriver held in a hand.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd feel safe flying around in this bucket of shit. Anyway, they're reunited with Vapor Rub, and Doc, even though he now knows that they only have 2 days on this planet, as in the planet only has 2 days left, he still tells Marga that they do have a fortnight left. Not entirely sure why. Like, how does that help their plan? Do you have any idea then?
I think it was really more of him just being his usual dickish self.
Oh, really?
There's not been enough of that in this episode, so...
Very true.
The Doctor's not been enough of an arsehole in this episode. on the other hand, possibly he was just trying to be tactical and keep the cards close to his chest for now.
I guess so, but like, how does that help him?
It's hard to keep the cards close to your chest.
Probably you are right. The less they know, the more an advantage he may have later on.
Yeah, and possibly he does, to an extent, agree with Stephen that these ladies are definitely not to be trusted.
Yeah.
He just won't admit that.
Like, well, I mean, I tried to touch up her vagina earlier on and no one seemed to react. Like, I don't know if we can trust these people anymore. Anyway, I think this may be a screenshot. I don't remember what I meant by this, but in my notes it says 7 minutes 36 seconds, weird nipple alert.
Oh, I don't remember a weird nipple.
Yeah, that may be a screenshot. I honestly cannot remember. Anyway, Marga goes, all right, listen, we now need to go, or possibly you now need to go and kill the Rill. I'm seeing a Quentin Tarantino poster here. Kill Rill.
Oh, wait, you got that before
me. Sorry about that. Great minds. Kill Rill.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Doc and company, they refuse. So Marga now pulls a laser blaster on them, and I think we should have a soundbite here of the Doctor. Soundbite?
Yeah.
In the first place, madam, I never kill anything. Neither do my friends.
Bullshit. Absolute bullshit. How many innocent people have the Doctor and his friends killed already? Vicky in particular is like the most bloodthirsty little girl. Sorry, what was that?
I would say that we know of.
Yeah, exactly. The Doc threw a guy out of a window in ancient Rome, by the way. It's like, no, I never kill anything. Fuck you, Doctor. Anyway, we get this action sequence, one might assume, as Steve-O attempts to wrestle the laser blaster from Marga's hands. We don't see this. We only have still images.
Yeah, but I just had a cacophony of noise that was not really comprehensible.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of the serial that's like that, especially episode 4. To me, was just like, I have no idea what's happening here.
At some point, it became very apparent that the same images were being used over.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Definitely in episode 4, but I think that was creeping in at this point as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because some of them were quite comical, which was nice.
Yeah. And I honestly never tired of seeing that 2 seconds clip of the antenna shooting out of a chimichanga as it goes...
You enjoyed that a little bit too much, didn't you?
I did. I was there with a bucket of Vaseline and that clip on an endless loop. It was fantastic. apologies, I'll cut that out. Sorry?
Podcast gold, what are you talking about?
Anyway, Steve-O tries to wrestle the gun from her, fails as he is stopped, or they are stopped, by the return of the Fembots. So Marga now has Vix at gunpoint, and Doc just all of a sudden confesses, actually, you know what? No, don't worry about it. It wasn't 2 weeks. I confess, it was actually just 2 days. Why? I don't get it.
I don't think it was clear at all. Maybe it might have been clear from visible action, perhaps.
Yeah. And also, if they wanted to in some way trick the Drawin into releasing Vix or whatever, like in any way, like in any case, fooling the Drawin or beating them, wouldn't it be good, since they were unobserved, unsupervised in the TARDIS, couldn't they just have brought something back?
Yeah.
The Doctor in the TARDIS has fucking roofied his own granddaughter. Surely he can bring something back to somehow beat these Drawin ladies. Pisses me off to no end.
Well, really, you just need to leave them on the planet to their own end, but...
Yeah. Steve-O now takes one for Team Unnecessary Peril and says he will stay behind in Vapor Upstead. So now Doc and Vicky head off, and they postulate that the Chumbly Wumblies haven't even tried to attack the Drawin ship, and if they had, then they would have straight up Hans Gruber the shit out of it, because remember the screwdriver thing was enough to essentially poke a hole in the hull. This thing is made out of paper mache. Sorry?
Imagine the damage you could do with a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah, exactly. Or Chumbly Wumbly. Yeah, exactly. And meanwhile, even Steven is trying to NLP one of the Drawin Chiquitas. He's saying things like, why does Marga get to eat real food while you ladies have to chow down on dry leaves? And why don't you give me your mediocre laser rifle and you take Marga's kaplamotastic ray gun and we can fight the chimichangas together? And what's-her-face, the Fembot, is totally up for this. But then Marga turns up, Margalof. She's been eavesdropping and de-NLPs the soldierette. And finally, almost halfway through this serial, it finally dawns on Marga to suggest taking the TARDIS out of Dodge. But no dice, says Steve-O.
This sort of little plot point with Steven being the new hostage.
Yeah.
Seemed kind of clear that this wasn't meant to be him in this position.
Yeah. He's too much of an alpha. He wouldn't have... Like, normally, he wouldn't be...
This isn't his normal tactic at all.
Exactly. Really. Yeah. No, that's true. And it's very much a... Well, it's not very much, but you can definitely imagine Barbara being in that situation.
Yeah. He's quite helpless here. It doesn't quite ring true. Which, again, sounds massively sexist, but this is just the sexist writing of...
Of 1965. Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Actually, wait, I take that back. You fucking sexist, Rollmeister.
It shines through... Sorry.
I'm kidding.
Well, it sort of shines through a little bit when you just randomly insert a male character where you'd written for a female.
Yeah, that's true. Unfortunately. Anyway.
which is why it does seem shoehorned in when he does act in a Steven-like manner, I guess.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So, sorry, we're getting off track there.
That's fine.
Is there Doc and Vicky here?
Yeah, and they are by... Well, they're close to the TARDIS anyway, and... they're not close to the TARDIS. They see a chum-chum, and... And the Doctor has his little... Actually, let's soundbite the Doctor again. He's just such a lovely character. Soundbite!
First, we must observe, note, collate, and then conclude. After that, perhaps we could act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because apparently the Doc has like a very nice Prince 2 certificate. He knows all about project management. So Vicky, meanwhile, throws a rock behind the chum-chum, having deduced that they can only look forwards, which is really weird. Like, wait.
The sonar forwards, which is...
Yeah, so what about sound? And also, I thought they scanned for heat signatures.
It doesn't really make any sense.
It makes no sense. So you can't even, like, Robert Redford in sneakers pass them.
Even, like, well, the only one which would really make sense would be not being able to see behind them.
Yeah.
If their only sense was vision, this would totally work. But sonar or hearing...
Yeah, they can only... Exactly, yeah. Or heat. They can only see heat signatures literally in front of them. And wouldn't, like, heat would escape and, you know, come around the bend a little bit anyway. Oh, it pisses me off. Doesn't matter.
The only sense I can think of where you can just see what's in front of you. Well, okay, maybe touch as well. itself, but they're not touching. So
no.
Sight and touch are the only ones which would really work in that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Bullshit.
Bullshit. So anyway, she throws a rock behind it. Turns out she's totally right, and then she prints twos the dock right back and goes, well, first I observed, then I noted, then I collated, and then I concluded. And they walk behind the Chimchimaru. Cut scene of Marga asking the Chiquitas how charged their iPods are, whatever they is, like their blasters, presumably, and reprimanding one of them for being, like, low on juice, saying that they're going to enter the real spaceship, and they're going to wipe them out, so she better recharge. Oh, actually, you know what? It must be the rifle. Like, you better recharge your rifle.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Doc and Vapor Rub have arrived at the real spaceship, and there's a there's a frame of Vicky No Pants wearing what looks like a short frilly dress from the Roaring Twenties. It's pretty hot. Like, I don't mind saying it. I would.
I mean, off the record, I was enjoying this, some of the stills of Vicky in this episode.
Basically. Off the record? Do you want me to cut that? Really?
Well, I don't know. I'll leave it in if you want.
That's what she said.
Yeah, some of the stills of Vicky did help get through the episode.
No, absolutely. She's growing on me a little bit. She's pretty cute.
She
as a character, she is absolutely annoying, though.
She's quite impressive that she can recognize she's not, because it's not an air purifier. I was going to say, it's amazing she can tell that thing is an air purifier, but it's not an air purifier.
Oh, yeah, the drilling rig, whatever it is.
Yeah, but anyway, that seemed a strange conclusion to jump to, because I wouldn't have had a fucking clue what that was.
Yeah, I don't. My notes here are very, very iffy. I'm not sure if maybe... Could it be, do you reckon, that they find both a drilling rig and an air purifier?
Yeah.
Maybe, because... spoiler alert. They are now at real HQ, basically.
Yeah.
And the real, they need power for their spaceship. They're trying to drill for it. So, yes, drilling rig. But the real also cannot survive in, the regular atmosphere of this planet, whose name we have never heard, by the way. Like, we don't know what this planet is or which planet it is. But for that reason, they have something that modifies the atmosphere, like basically just adds, what is it?
They said it smells of ammonia.
So ammonia, yeah, that's what it was, yeah.
They breathe ammonia, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. They add ammonia gas to the atmosphere. Yeah. So very possibly, there is reason to believe that there is both a drilling rig and an air purifier, quote-unquote, here. So maybe...
purifier, really.
Sorry?
It's more of an air polluter than anything else.
Yeah, it's an ammonia purifier.
Yeah. They find a sleeping Chumbly in here.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, you're totally, totally right.
They sort of giggle away at it for no apparent reason. Vicky seems to find this unaccountably hilarious. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, it's a smaller one or something. I've got it down as a chimichanga repair shop.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So there are bits of... this is my least favorite one. Changes all over the place.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, I was just going to say, Vicky sort of seems to temporarily lose her shit over how hilarious the tiny sleeping Chumbly is.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And they make a joke about, like, oh, maybe it's a kid.
Yeah, which, why would you build that? Like,
and the doc even taps it with his cane.
Yeah.
Yeah, smart doc.
Well, that wakes it up temporarily, and then it just goes back to sleep.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It just goes, oh, I can't be arsed. Hit snooze again. And Doc and Vapor Rub just laugh. They have seen these machines be activated and potentially murder. They've seen it set fire to a bush.
So they just assume this one's completely harmless.
It makes absolutely no sense.
But it gives us a moment of light relief before... Dun, dun, dun!
Yeah, the reel appears in the window.
Yeah.
Scaring the bejesus out of No Pants.
Yeah. I think her scream scared me more than the actual reel scared me.
Oh, really?
But maybe that's because I should probably say here, the episode we're about to launch into, Airlock, the version I had of this was the stills.
I am so desperately sorry.
Well, I'm sorry I failed to find it, because I think I would have enjoyed it much more than I did. But
I think you would have. I saw the actual live action version of this.
But as far as I can remember, that image we see of the reel there peering through the window is the only image I get of the fucking thing.
Oh, man, I'm really sorry to hear that. I don't know if it helps you in any way. In my notes, we only see one reel, and he looks like a toad with a severe eye infection and a vagina dentata where its mouth should be.
That's amazing.
But they are essentially the shape of the Hutts. Like, it could very easily just be Jabba the Hutt.
From the JPEG you later sent me, I agree.
Yeah.
Where I have to see a full-size thing. Oh, yeah, I mean, actually, it puts me in mind of...
Like a walrus.
Star Wars, and, yeah, a walrus, and kind of, yeah, the frogs from Rupert and the Frog Song a little bit.
Oh, I don't know that.
Seeing that, that's obscure... It's not that obscure, but you know Rupert the Bear, right?
No.
You don't know Rupert the... Oh, God,
no.
Just English. Rupert the Bear is like a kid's cartoon thing of this little white bear who wears like a yellow scarf and has adventures with his friends.
Okay.
Paul McCartney wrote a song for a film version of this called Rupert and the Frog Song.
Oh, wow.
Has all these frogs. He goes down to a cave and witnesses these frogs performing this ridiculous song. It's one of McCartney's more shameful career moves, I would say. But also a part of my childhood, and I'm a little bit affectionate towards it.
Fair enough. I can understand that.
The frog song, it's like 15 minutes of your time that you'll never get back. Yeah, should we launch into the episode?
Yeah, sure. Episode 3, Airlock. Ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land, if you haven't seen the serial, but for some reason you've decided... Oh, you know what? The Rollmeister and Ponkin make it sound so incredibly entertaining. I absolutely want to see it. Try to avoid what unfortunately happened to the Rollmeister. Try to get your hands on the recently rediscovered episode 3, because you can see it, and it looks spectacular, especially after having seen 2 episodes of just still images. The contrast is just like, oh my God. It's like you're seeing moving images for the first time in your life.
I wish I knew what that felt like.
That's what she said. Okay, so episode 3, we now see the real semi-properly through the window, and it's like bobbing to and fro, like it's just spanking it to the side of bipeds. Or maybe it saw the dog smile and it's pounding one off to his very English set of teeth, no offense. But yeah, because... these things have massive tusks. Weirdly, though, even though... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we said this earlier. Even though Vicky saw it... Like, Vicky and the doc must have clearly seen its face, right? Because they got mega scared, or Vicky especially got mega scared.
Yeah, but then the thing shut.
Yeah, but it's... Yeah, exactly. It seems as though going forward, up until, spoiler alert, in the end, when they actually come face-to-face with this thing, it seems as though they have no idea what they look like. Like, they're just this disembodied voice.
Yeah. It's like a weird retcon between episodes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly.
When you say a weird voice, do you mean a Vincent Price impression?
It could very well be. They're speaking through, I guess, speakers attached to the Chumbawambas.
The Chumbawambas seem to essentially just be giant speakers, actually.
Yeah, you're right.
It seemed like the most appropriate thing that they've done so far.
So now Doc and Vicky, they run around, they're chased by a Chumbawamba until they sort of outvoard it by just hiding around a corner or behind a table or whatever it is. But then a wall comes down and they're separate. And I'm pretty sure that you see Vicky actually like pull down the wall, by the way.
I wish I'd seen that.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Yeah, anyway, so they try to open up the door thingy or the collapsed wall, which is just like it's bars, basically. And the doc goes, it's immovable. I can't move it. The doc is now, he is on the side of the wall where the ammonia gas machine thingamajiggy is, the air to ammonia gas converter. And he is now obviously going to sabotage it, he says. But instead of actually doing so, he just stands idly by as two chimichangas appear on Vicky's side and indicate that they want her to follow them, which Doc then suggests that she do. Like, what? It makes absolutely no sense. In my notes, by the way, I've said, by the way, Vicky is mega cute. When did that happen? Or did I just not notice before? So anyway, she leaves, and the doc's like, hate to see you leave, but love to see you go. And then he gets to work on the converter with a screwdriver. Thank God the real use standard flathead screws, I guess. Cut to the Jarvin ship. Marga has gone totally freaking Norman Bates. And A, provides exposition about their objective to take over the galaxy and their lack of morality and even caring for their friends. Like, she even says something like, oh, I've heard of alien creatures who have friends that they try to help, and it is entirely alien to me. So that's A. B, she holds a soliloquy for the benefit of literally no one about how she's going to steal the real ship, and then she says she's going to get super wet when the planet explodes with the Rill and the group on it. It is so insanely psychotic. And by the way, she now appears to have totally forgotten about the TARDIS.
I think it was in this scene where, in the version I was watching, we obviously were a little, these captions trying to describe what's going on.
Yeah.
It's either in this scene or the next scene, there was a line saying, a creaking noise causes the Drawin to jerk. I just thought it was worth making a note.
Hot. Not having seen that version myself, I guess I missed out on a boner, but that sounds pretty good.
I'm sad I didn't get a proper visual of the jerking.
Well, I can tell you what it is. It's the Stevenmeister not waking up. He's awake and eavesdropping. Yeah. And then I guess he moves around a little bit. There's a creak. And when the Drawin Chiquita turns around to goes, hey, what the hell is going on? He just pretends to still be out of it. So then Marga orders her Chiquita fembots to split up. One is to go rest, one is to guard Steve-O, and one is to go looking for Doc and No Pants. So now cut back to No Pants having a conversation with a Rill who remains behind glass, I guess safe inside his ammonia gas atmosphere, which is very, very reminiscent of how the guild operators in Lynch's version of June look, by the way. It looks, I mean, super like that. Especially since the thing is, it seems as though it's sort of bobbing around, like it's just floating around. You know, like the guild operators, the ones that fold space?
Yeah.
It looks like that. You know, they're in this kind of weird smoky environment, bobbing around and, looking generally worm-like.
Yeah. Minor side note, presumably there's a leak somewhere if Doc and Vicky can smell the ammonia.
That's a good point. That is a good... Yeah, don't stay around here. This is not a safe... Health and safety, people.
Well, either the oxygen's going to come in and kill Rill.
Only
kill the Doc and Vicky, I'm not sure. One is clearly leaking into the other and vice versa.
That's very, very, very true. Yeah. Thinking where that plot could go to. Anyway, we learn a few things from this conversation. Number one, the Rills are telepathic. Even though they have what looks like a pretty sort of run-of-the-mill mouth, they don't actually speak. They communicate telepathically.
Run-of-the-Rill mouth, surely. Terrible.
No, that's great.
I'm withdrawn. That was awful.
Numero dos. It was, in fact, not the Rill who attacked first. It was the Drawin. And number three, the Rills did not kill a Drawin. A Drawin was just injured, and then Marga turned up and blasted the shit out of it. And part of this we learn through a flashback. It's very nicely sort of blurred into this reenactment of what is being told to Vix Vaporub. And this is undoubtedly the most vicious killing on the show so far. I'm sorry that you missed this.
This sounds kind of good.
Yeah, no, it's...
You didn't get much of a flavor beyond the soliloquy,
I'm sorry that you didn't get a still of that. It's definitely not for kids. There's this injured Drawin lying on the floor, like her arms and legs are broken or something. She's just lying on the floor, or on the ground. Marga comes up to her, gets her laser blaster, points, like standing up over the body of this Drawin, points it at her face and just goes, kablamo. And that's part of a flashback. Kids watched this in 1965. Disconcerting.
You could get away with subjecting kids to this shit much easier then.
Okay, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is now where we learn that the Rills would die if they didn't have ammonia. So we already knew this, I guess. Why the heck else would they have an atmosphere converter? Right, but this is news to Vix, who dashes off to stop the Doctor from accidentally murdering all of them. And boom, cut back to the Drawin spaceship, where incredibly and surprisingly a brutal scene follows in which Steve's guard, Chiquita or whatever, like Steve's fembot, has fallen asleep at her post, and he sneaks up, grabs her gun, covers her mouth, and freaking Kato chops her neck with a thump. This is... Sorry?
No, carry on.
This is something that I bet is totally a remnant of this being actually meant for Barbara. Because holy shit, this is a man beating the consciousness out of a woman on screen.
Yeah.
Very crazy. Anyway, so now we find out why this episode is called Airlock, because he's now got the gun. He locks himself in the airlock. Che Guevara is on the other side. So he's now in between a chimichanga and Margalef. And we cut back to... And, like, stuck, basically. Then cut back to No Pants and one of the Chitty Chitty Bang Bangs arriving to stop the Doc and his attempt to commit genocide. And then there's this really weird scene. Did you get this? The whole, like, doctor speaking very loudly, and Vicky just goes, oh, doctor, doctor, they're not deaf. Like, she stopped him from doing it. And I was like, oh, they're not deaf. And he goes, oh, I'm terribly sorry. Meanwhile, the real voice, the speaker voice, is freaking booming and epically loud. Like, you would assume that it has...
It's difficult to know how to, what volume to respond to. You know, you instinctively want to join in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we learn a few more things here. There's just basically more exposition. The doc tells the Rills about the two-day deadline, saying, like, you were mistaken, it's not a fortnight. Question for you, Rollmeister. How did Doc know that the Rills were also mistaken about the deadline?
That is a good question. There's absolutely, as far as I can recall, no
reason.
Would.
Right. Yeah. I'm thinking this is a plot hole.
Yeah, that sounds like a plot hole to me.
Yeah. And we also learn, anyway, that they have been drilling for gas, hence the drilling rig or whatever, if that was a drilling rig. They've been drilling for gas to get enough power to jumpstart their ship or to, like, recharge their batteries. And he goes, don't worry about it. I've got some jumper cables. I can jumpstart you with power from my TARDIS. And then a Chad Lowe reports that Steve Meister is in trouble and Vicky wants to go rescue him. And the doc basically just goes, fuck Steven.
Which would have been presumably fuck Barbara in the original
story. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, whatever, she can take care of herself. Which is basically what he says about Steve. He's like, oh, don't worry about it, it's totally fine. Cut to the title airlock, out of which Marga is just emptying all of the air.
Again, in this sequence, they kept showing the same picture of Steven over and over again, where he is supposedly gasping for air.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I thought it looked more like he just found his prostate gland.
Good for him.
The happiest gasping for air I've ever seen.
According to the cha-cha-chas, they are cries of distress, though.
Cries of something.
Cries of pleasure.
Having only that still to go on. unless he has that asphyxiation fetish, you know.
Oh, yes, autoerotic asphyxiation. He's like, yeah. Dump the oxygen, Marga, dump the oxygen.
There we go.
Stop.
Literally
pounding one off. Anyway, Blammo, the cha-cha-cha is now saying he's hearing these cries of distress. At which point, the doc now suddenly springs to action. Surely it is too late now, by the way. And these are now things... I'm sorry, I've got a few observations which I'm afraid you will have missed in your still image version. Because, number one, they couldn't be in any less of a hurry. They go, oh my god, we have to go save him. And then they very calmly exit Rill HQ. And the doctor even stays behind to let some Chumbawambas turn up to escort them.
Well, the doctor's already made it pretty clear he does not give a fuck what happens to Steve. That's Vicky, maybe less so, but you know.
They're on a casual stroll on the countryside as opposed to on a rescue mission.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they head off to the ship. On the way, they encounter a Dramin Chiquita, whom Vic spends maybe two of Steve's potentially final minutes alive. Convincing that they've captured the chimichangas, which it then turns out is to no avail whatsoever because the Chiquita attacks the chimichangas nonetheless. And the doc then literally canes her and she basically just goes all Ronin on them, says, oh, you know what? You have to kill me now because I've failed my mission in life as a soldier. Did you get all this in your version?
I didn't get the caning.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because he's got a walking stick. He literally just goes, voom.
Where does he hit her?
I'm exaggerating this. He hits her arm and she drops her rifle. Got to point out here, though, she also has another laser blaster on her hip, which she completely ignores. She is the worst soldier ever. So she loses her rifle. Big fucking whoop. Take your blaster and use that instead. But instead she goes Ronin. She just goes, you know what? I don't deserve to live. Now kill me. And they refuse to kill her. So now they head off to her ladyship. I apologize.
That was good.
Back at the airlock, Steve is now collapsing, and this is another thing that you will have missed, because, and I think this might be a first on Doctor Who so far, we get two different video clips overlaid on each other.
Oh.
Yeah, and it sort of feels kind of modern in a way. The back layer is, well, it doesn't matter which layer, they're both showed, they're superimposed. One layer is the Steve Meister collapsing in the corner, and the layer on top is an oxygen meter.
Oh.
Like, it's just dropping from 100 down to literally zero.
Oh, you know what, I got the image of the oxygen meter on its own.
Oh, okay.
Overlaying.
Well, you see him collapsing. It looks really nice, actually, but the needle goes from, and I timed this, the needle goes from 40 to 10% in about 2 seconds.
Wow.
Meaning that it should have taken circa 7 seconds for him to suffocate.
Yeah, unless the needle was stuck for a while, then it suddenly recovered itself.
Yeah, maybe, but in fact, what happens is we end this episode on the needle hitting zero.
Ooh.
So there is no oxygen in there. Stephen is dead.
Yeah, you can last a little while without the oxygen.
Without any oxygen? Can you? Can you actually? Like, I don't know. I mean, no. I've seen sci-fi movies where people float around in space for a good, like, 15 seconds without a spacesuit and they survive that. I'm assuming that's not possible, but...
Sure, that's very, very impossible.
Yeah. Kablamatron, final episode. Episode 4, The Exploding Planet.
Now, that's an exciting title.
Yeah, and this starts off with just the dumbest scene ever, which, if you saw the same version that I did, mine was also still images, but there were a few scenes that were actual video, then you will have seen this.
Visual bits here and there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My version, anyway, started off with one of the Chuck Norrises approaching with another carafe of olive oil, and it's not a bomb this time, it's some sort of tear gas grenade or something, and it throws it into the ship through the window. What the actual fuck? This is a spaceship, there is an open window,
yeah,
or possibly just a hole in the wall, and it just throws it through there. Why would you even bother with an airlock on this spaceship?
If you have a window that just opens.
Yeah, totally. Oh. Then it fires at the door, which opens, out pops Steve, miraculously unfainted now, and I've made a note here just to say that at this point, at least in my version, the audio quality dropped significantly.
There were a lot of lines I really couldn't make out.
Yeah.
This was the part where I started to really struggle with the episode.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, still images and shitty audio are not a great combination.
Yeah, and maybe not the best plot in the world either.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they now head off with an escort of chaplains. And then they're attacked by Chiquitas, and then Vagina de Tartaface, he tannoys in and says that they will always protect their friends, i.e. the gang, and that they will prevent any further attempts by the Fembots to even leave their spaceship, which pretty much makes the real kind of badass. I mean, like, thereby they are essentially dooming the Fembots to be blown up along with the planet.
It's not as benevolent as they initially presented themselves.
No, that's true.
yeah.
Cut back to inside the Fembot ship, where Marga is telling her Chiquitas to disregard the fact that they're grossly outnumbered, and instead pop out the back door, and kill the Chumbawamba who's standing guard outside. Just a cutscene. Back at real HQ now, the troop split up again, and I honestly couldn't hear the reason why.
No idea.
Really sorry, ladies and gentlemen. At this point, there is so much that is just completely lost.
Write in and tell us what happened in this scene. If you indeed know.
There is meant to be I haven't heard it, but there's meant to be an audiobook version of this.
Yeah, I tried to find that, actually, because I thought it might be...
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I couldn't find it.
Yeah, no, right. Unfortunately.
Do you want money for this? Fucking BBC. You made this a fucking long time ago.
Yeah.
Destroyed it and then tried to make yet more money off it. Make it by the British public. See? I mean, I love you. Don't go away.
Presumably there's like a VHS or DVD release of the Loose Cannon Productions, the people who did the reconstructions, which, by the way, I cannot thank them enough, because if they hadn't done that, we would have had essentially nothing. We would have had some really garbled audio, but they've done this fantastic job, really.
Sorry guys for ragging on it. So.
Yeah. Apologies, but I don't know when this recon was made in the first place, but either way, good job. So thank you. Anyway, so where were we? Yes, back at Real HQ, the troop has been split up. No idea why, but the Doc and Vicky now head off while Steve-O stays with the Dentata. And Steve doesn't seem to understand why he's been left there either. Like, the real... There's a quote here. The real go, "You've not gone with your friends." And he just looks around for maybe 10 seconds before uttering a very disillusioned... "No." Like, not even the Steve Meister knows what's going on. Poor guy nearly died a moment ago, and now they've ostensibly abandoned him again, so Steve just cannot catch a break.
He's suffering multiple personalities in this episode as it is, so...
Yeah.
Not a good day for Steve.
No, absolutely not. Poor Steve.
You could argue that maybe he's left behind to recover after his near-death experience, you know. You'd need to literally take a breather, I imagine.
Yeah, so where better to have a breather than in a place that's leaking ammonia gas into the atmosphere?
Exactly.
Anyway, we get this really weird garbled dialogue. I missed a lot of this. Jump in if you got any more of this than I did. But not very much is heard. It does appear as though the topic of conversation is that Steve doesn't trust the Rill, though. But the outcome of the conversation is that, oh, you know what? Actually, he does trust them. And in fact, he now offers to help fix the cables at their ends, which, like, what the hell else is he meant to do? Surely that's what must have been the plan all along. Like, hey, you stay here and fix the cables. Doc and Vicky have basically gone to project manage the cable and installation over at the TARDIS. But Steve hasn't been given a task. Anyway, he does now start working on the cables. Meanwhile, Doc and Vicky are, they are project managing the cable installation at the TARDIS. So while they're doing that, everybody's favorite band, Marga and the Fembots, they are experiencing what looks like an earthquake. Like this must be sort of the opening act of the planets blowing up. And then once again, they say, yeah, let's destroy the machine and get the shit out of Dodge. Thank you for saying that again. Cut to a Fembot. This is where the pin that we put in the very beginning of episode one comes into play. We cut to a Fembot sneaking up on a Chud and bashing it to bits with a stick. So what we've learned is, what we've learned about the Chumbawambas is, they have proven immune to laser blasters, crazy future space rifles, and the beatings of a very, very tall, muscular alpha male, namely the Steve Meister. But apparently you can physically destroy them, actually severely dent the metal that they are made out of by hitting them with a stick.
Yeah, it's a peculiar thing because you can temporarily disable them with a magnet.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yes, on the net, you're right.
But then take an even less effective weapon and that disables them. It seems like the less effective the weapon you use, the more success you're going to have. Like, if you get a feather, you could destroy them all, I imagine.
Yeah, you're right. Just sort of gently blow at them.
Yeah.
So then we get a little cutscene of one of the Charmers guarding the open TARDIS, by the way. Good idea, guys. This does not pan out, though. And then we get back to the real HQ, where the Doc is now there. And this is where, remember in the beginning when you said, like, oh, what did you think of this whole thing? And I said, yeah, time management is one of the things that pissed me off.
Yeah.
So we are now back at real HQ, and the Doc says, quote, it will take 3 to 4 hours to recharge the batteries. And the Steve Meister points out that the planet is due to Kablamo in less than 5 hours. And then the real tells them about the demolished Chum Chum, and we get a 15-second cutscene of the Chiquitas planning to approach yet again, as though we haven't heard that enough. And then the Rill, back at Rill HQ, the Rill says, you know what, it'll be another 2 hours before the batteries are recharged. What? So in this time, as much as 2 hours may have passed, and we get no indication of, like, time cut, nothing like that.
They were probably super busy doing something.
Yeah, but there's no indication of time passing.
I don't know why I'm defending this. The indication, it could be there in the dialogue. but you could very, very easily miss it. Very, very easily miss it.
I feel like there should have been at least a 10-second clip of, I don't know, maybe one of the three stars in the sky. Like one of the three suns. Was it? I can't remember if it was suns. Like one of the suns setting or something like that.
The sun and stars. But do we know for sure there was nothing there, because we just have the still images.
Only have the still images, but we cut very quickly between the scenes.
Yeah, I'm just thinking maybe there was something that we could have picked up on that we didn't, because we didn't have the episode to watch. So
okay, fair enough, benefit of the doubt,
but you're probably right though.
Yeah.
Probably just completely fucked that one up.
I hate to say it, I think I'm probably right as well, because this happens at least one more time.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's one more thing here that I don't understand at all. Please try to explain this to me. In my notes, I've said, suddenly, Marga appears out of nowhere, says that she's prepared to die a warrior death, then one of the Chum splooges on her, the Rill says that she's completely paralyzed, and then Doc and Cole go in to see the Rill face to face. And we get a cutscene now, outside, of Marga with her Fembots, and she is very much mobile and unparalyzed. And then suddenly she's being attacked by three Charms, who again bukkake them. So what happened? Did she get into Rill HQ?
I have no fucking clue. But I have no fucking clue.
I don't get it either. The reel definitely said, oh, don't worry about her. She is totally paralyzed. Like the whatever gas or something that the chum splooged on her was like poisonous in some way, paralyzing her. Makes no sense.
Write in if you can make sense of this scene.
Thank you very much in advance.
Yeah.
Anyway, blam, blam, blam.
What was the writer of this episode again?
That's a good question. Let's find out.
William Ems.
William Ems. Let's have a tiny writer tangent, ladies and gentlemen, just see if he's written anything else. Okay, he wrote Galaxy 4, the novelization of Galaxy 4, and then he wrote, because you need a novelization of this story.
Maybe someone has the novelization and can find out from that what was supposed to be going on here.
Here's a really cool thing, though. He wrote a make-your-own-adventure book, a Doctor Who make-your-own-adventure book.
Ooh.
Called Mission to Venus. That's pretty rad. I really want to get a hold of that.
You wait for your birthday. It has an amazing cover.
Yeah, it does.
It's the Sixth Doctor.
It is the Sixth Doctor. That's really strange, actually. Wait, like, when was this written? It was written in 1986. Huh, cool. All right, fair enough. Well done, William Ems. Shame he couldn't have written a better TV serial in 65. Anyway, back with the story. Blam, blam, blam. Doc and Co are now in with the Rill. And they have a very long conversation. Yada, yada, yada. Long story short, what they say is basically, beauty is on the inside.
You think that was the ultimate message of this episode?
I don't think...
Just shoehorned in at the end as the ultimate message of the episode.
I think they just needed to have some kind of moral nugget for the kids. Because it's like, okay, what have we had so far? We've had misogyny, plenty thereof, by the way. We've had an actual, like, I was going to say wife beating. Oh. We've had an actual beating of one of the Draben women by Stephen.
Yeah, sorry, I just realised this was why I was thinking, were they supposed to be stunningly beautiful as the contrast to the real?
Oh, I see, yeah, because... Like,
that was why I was thinking that at the beginning of the episode. Because that would have made... Because if they had been, like, overwhelmingly beautiful and everyone was, like, commenting on that and everyone was overwhelmed by how beautiful they were, then that would have maybe been a...
That would have made sense.
It would have been more effective in setting up this moral, I suppose.
Yeah, no, you're very right. That would have made perfect sense.
Written to how ugly the real are as well. There wasn't a whole lot of that beyond find them, beyond...
Very true. But then they do actually say some very nice things here that we haven't got at all during the rest of the previous episodes. It's like, yeah, but we must appear just as ugly to you as you do to us. Which, by the way, means that they're saying, yeah, you look fucking ugly, guys.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think they just ham-fisted something into the story. I think you're right, though. It would have been better if the Draben were hot. But I don't reckon that they were meant to be. Like,
I'm not saying the Draben were ugly or anything.
No. I don't think so either.
Just saying, but it wasn't like I thought, oh, these are meant to be, like, really stunning or anything, because it wasn't even there.
Agreed, and they don't really wear very flattering outfits either.
But it wasn't there evident from the characters' reactions that they were supposed to be at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it seems like this was just a bit of an afterthought rather than an intended during the writing.
Very possible.
During the writing of the rest of this series, I guess.
Very possible. Presumably we will never find out. Anyway, so now they leave the real audience chamber, shall we call it? They're outside, and now we learn that there is 1 hour remaining until the charging is complete, and that the planet will die in 1.5 hours. Then we get a cutscene of even more fighting between the Drawin and some of the Chimichangas outside. This fighting leads literally nowhere, and Marga even says their guns cannot harm the Chimichangas. So why don't they use a stick then? Clearly that is a proven technique. Anyway, nothing happens. Cut back to Rill HQ, and now the doc says the ship is fully charged. So what the hell? This is my point about the time management. We had 3 to 4 hours, then boom, 2 seconds later, it's 2 hours, then 2 seconds later, oh, it's actually completely done. And nothing has happened during this time. Like, as far as we know, the what's happening with the Drawin outside and what's happening with the docking company in Rill HQ is happening in parallel. It's not happening one after the other, right? Yeah. So no time has passed, but within the concept of this story, 4 hours have passed. It's ridiculous. weird thing here as well. The Riddle says, okay, you know what? Now let's just say goodbye. You go back to the TARDIS. We'll get one of the Chombleys, because that's what we call them now as well. We'll get one of the Chombleys to escort you back to the TARDIS. And then that Chombley is going to destroy itself. This machine is going to self-destruct. And Vicky cries out, no!
Good impression.
Thank you very much. And boom, cut to outside. The Chiquitas see the real ship escaping. They decide to hijack the TARDIS instead. Will this pan out?
No.
Bingo. And then we get a cutscene that is of no consequence whatsoever, as next thing we know, the troop is dematerializing in the TARDIS, and the planet blows up, and as it does so, we see Marga.
Yay. Sorry. You're expecting me to say something about that.
We probably had different versions of this as well, dude. Don't worry about it.
I saw the planet exploding, but I don't recall what Marga...
I had a version that included a shot of Marga standing maybe 2 feet from this awful, wrinkly, mad painting. Like, it is you can see that it is wrinkly, and she's just sort of holding her head, going, ah! Everything gets super bright, and then the planet explodes. Kerblammo.
No, I don't remember seeing that bit. I remember just cutting to the...
I feel bad that you watched a really, really crap version of this serial. I feel guilty.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. Well, lesson learned, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, don't watch this on Daily Motion.
Yeah. I was glad to see the planet explode, though.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool effect, actually.
I totally believe they blew up something for that.
Yeah, me too. I think that looked almost... Okay, no. I was going to say, like, oh, that looked almost like episode 4 level of planet explosions. But no, not at all. Still, it did look okay. We get a little soundbite here, I think, of the doc. We haven't had one of those in a while. What do you say? Soundbite?
Yeah.
Kablamatron soundbite.
You know, I wish we could stop somewhere for a while and take stock of ourselves instead of being surrounded by dangers all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll pan out.
That's the next episode.
Yeah, the next episode. Totally boring. Sitting on a beach. Nope.
It's a driven episode.
Well, as we've learned from such golden moments as serial number 3, The Edge of Discretion, no, character-driven episodes, not necessarily the best ones. But we do get a hint at what's going to go down next time. Number 1, Vicky has, like, sprained her ankle or something, so she's going to be slightly out of commission next time, presumably. And number 2, she spots a planet on the scanner and says she's wondering what's happening there. And we get this, I think, really nice episode closer where we zoom down onto the planet. And what do we see on the planet, Rohrmeister?
We see some kind of astro-looking dude mumbling about killing.
Yeah. This helmetless astronaut waking up, toting a laser blaster, going, I remember now, I must kill!
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I hope that's going to be in the next episode.
I presume that it will. And that's it. That's end of Galaxy 4. Reviews.
Well, I found this a really difficult episode to judge fairly because of the lack of actual episode there was to watch for me.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I have to take some of the blame for that, for not being able to find the only full episode of footage that there was.
No
but,
problem.
I mean, it was an okay story, but it wasn't. It didn't do a lot, really, for me.
To hold not for me.
Or interest me in any way.
Okay, high points and low points.
High point would be Stephen orgasming. Let's just go for that.
Low point.
For him, at least.
Yeah, true.
low point, on the other hand, would probably be the fairly poor lack of continuity or time management.
Yeah.
Because, it didn't make a whole lot of sense here and there.
Agreed. So, what are you giving this in terms of rating?
I think I'm going to have to give this 0 points.
0 points?
No, I haven't finished.
Okay, sorry.
I'm trying to decide what the...
I see 0 point and then something. I thought you were saying, like, I'm giving this 0 points, full stop.
Zero point. I'm giving this 0.5.
Wow.
0.5 is pretty arbitrary.
Well, you're being honest.
I might have to give this a retrospective better score when I go back and actually see the proper version
of episode 3.
Yeah, I may want to revise my score after I've seen that, I think. But we'll see.
Yeah. Oh,
maybe give it 0.4 after seeing that. But I think literally seeing any additional action will probably improve my score.
Probably. It's really difficult not to rate these down based on like just the unavailability.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm probably being spectacularly unfair to, and I'd probably give it a completely different rating if I was able to watch it properly. In
no, totally fair.
But
I think that's totally fair.
Yeah.
I'm curious to hear from people who've heard the audiobook or who potentially have read the novelization of this, if there's anyone out there who's done that.
There's someone out there, surely.
JD, fess up. No, I'd be very curious. But okay, yeah, cool. Thank you very much for your mini review. Here's what I think. I'm in a slightly less severe situation than yours in that I did see episode 3 as video.
Yeah.
And I had a version that wasn't missing. I mean, we should really point this out in case anyone thinks that it's weird that we don't remember the same things. It seems very much like our versions were very different. And like I said, mine didn't have an outro. Yours had an outro, so I'm missing that as well. Oh, wait, how? Shit, fuck. What was your outro?
My outro was Peter Purves talking.
Okay, and that was, what, was that roughly what I had an intro?
Sorry?
Was that roughly what I had as my intro?
Yeah, I think it sounds like it was probably the same thing, just in a different place.
Okay.
Yeah.
So someone just put this together differently, and spoiler alert, we acquired these episodes elsewhere, but, you know, the Raw Meister saw this on Dailymotion, I acquired it elsewhere. It doesn't matter.
I saw this in like a combination of Dailymotion, YouTube, and wherever the hell I downloaded the rest of it from. So.
Yeah. Again, really, really sorry. I feel incredibly guilty about this. But okay, so let's terminate Galaxy 4. I will really try to not be swayed by the unavailability of video footage here. But even that being said, I'm really not that impressed by the story. I think the Chumblies are really annoying because they just seem like budget Daleks. And it's just completely inconsistent in terms of what their weapons do and how strong they are. Like, are they really that powerful an adversary if you can sneak up and bash them over the head with a stick? I don't think so. The sexism is just unbelievable. You have these fembots who are literally written as characters who are meant to be, beautiful and dumb. Like, they are literally violent bimbos. And it couldn't be more sexist there. That pisses me off.
Maybe that's where Violent Femmes got their nickname, their band name from.
The Violent Femmes?
Yeah.
Yeah, they watched this on Daily Motion.
Yeah.
And were just so pissed off they had to write a song about it.
Named their band after them. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's fine. Okay. I think it's massively inconsistent in terms of what the Rill, how the Rill are motivated. I think the Rill aren't very impressive either as far as characters are concerned. We get nothing of substance. We get nothing about, we get little hints of all these motivations, the Rill being these super advanced creatures, but we don't really get anything that's super advanced except for the Chumblies that also, as I said, aren't really super advanced. We get hints that the Draven want to take over the universe, but we get nothing about that. The whole serial is called Galaxy 4, but has nothing to do with Galaxy Number 4. Pisses me off. Why wasn't this called something else? I'm looking forward to reading that list from one of our listeners.
Yeah, it's the most inappropriate there.
Yeah, so, it really is. I'm going to give this serial a 1.5. And that's because I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt. I'm assuming that it is better than... like, it's better than it is enjoyable to watch today. Because there's so little to watch. It is clearly very... it's not enjoyable at all. Sitting through these four episodes today, but presumably it must have been better. So
it presumably was the most exciting thing, you know, since last week's episode.
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And also, I did. Well, no. I have no. Also. Oh no. Wait. Sorry. I do have one. Also. I think the inclusion of some of the technology, some of like the realism for the Rill. I think that's very modern in terms of, and like elaborate in terms of science fiction. The fact that they have a different atmosphere and that they have to stay contained in like a little glass jar, basically. I think that's cool. We haven't seen anything like that on Doctor Who so far. I think that's quite.
That's not a million miles off from the Daleks having to be in their shells.
Oh, I suppose that's a good point. Yeah. No, that is a good point.
But it's still...
I take that back. But, okay.
But it's still... It is a nice thing to include.
Yeah, absolutely. That's sort of high concept in terms of sci-fi.
Yeah.
Sorry, now I cut you off there.
No, not at all. I was saying it's, you know... I don't know, it's superior maybe to the 90% humanoid aliens we get in Star Trek, for example.
Definitely. And the 99% humanoid aliens we get on Doctor Who so far. I mean, so far we basically have the Rill and the Daleks.
Yeah.
And then the entire rest, so far in the story, are more or less humanoid. I mean, okay, fine, there are some exceptions, like the Dalek had their weird henchmen monster thingies, whatever they were called, during the invasion. But, like, no, pretty much everyone is humanoid. Does not matter. 1.5. I never want to see this again. We have a whole bunch of mini reviews. Thank you so much for sending them in. Starting off, we're doing these in chronological order, by the way, so there's no bias in any way. Our first one comes from Gina Guerrero. Gina, I've missed you. Where are you? How you doing? Gina's written a fantastic review. Rawmeister, do you want to start off?
Yes, I did.
Go for it.
So, I wasn't really expecting too much from this story. It took me 7 dawns to actually finish watching it. We find the Doctor, Vicky and Stephen arriving on a seemingly deserted planet where they run into beehive-looking jumblies that make almost zombie-like bleating noises.
Yes.
They get caught up in the middle of a war between the Dravins and the Rills. Each has crash-landed after a confrontation in space. The Dravins are a beautiful matriarchal alien race who are hell-bent on destroying the Rills and stealing their partially working ship. The Rills are a hideous-looking alien race that are just kindly explorers. Despite generous offers by the Rills to take Marga and her crew to safety, she continually refuses. Marga tries to force the Doc and crew to help her steal the Rills' ship and kill the Rills. Instead, the Doctor allows the Rills to draw power from the TARDIS to refuel and escape, leaving the Dravins to their fate.
She goes on, I had some strong reactions to this story as a woman. It appeared to me that this story was a battle of the sexes, thinly veiled as an alien story. The story portrays the Drawins, females quote-unquote, as manipulative, calculating, and emotional, with beauty as their only redeeming quality. The Rills, or quote-unquote males, are ugly, scary looking, but kind, compassionate, and rational. I found myself feeling irritated with this sexist portrayal. Despite the sexist undertones, I actually did find it to be interesting, and with a good twist. Mm-hmm.
So she goes on to add her stray observations. I think this is the first time the Doctor actually stated that his travels are for, in inverted commas, science.
Ah, good observation. Next up, did anyone else find the Doctor creepy pointing and looking at all of Marga's female bits when he was clarifying what sex the Drawins were? Yeah, me too. Yeah, pointed that out.
She also adds, Vapor Rub had one moment of usefulness when she discovers that Chumblies can detect only what is in front of them, and the Doctor's quick to be condescending, even though she's right.
Yeah, we saw a lot of that with Susan before, though, as well.
And that with all females, I guess.
Yeah, true. Next up, surprisingly, Vicky does not get the most useless companion title in this story. Stephen wins this with his random feminism and fake sleeping.
I thought that was going to be random feminization. So, and she adds, lastly, I felt the story was bogged down with the amount of alien monologuing. Yeah. So she sums up, even with most of the story being a reconstruction and pretty boring, I slightly enjoyed it more than I expected to. I'm giving it a sexist 2.4.
2.4.
Generous, I'd say.
Very, very generous. But holy crap, she's added a factor to this, like a reading of this plot that I hadn't even really considered. The Drawings being female and the Rill being male.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
It makes perfect sense. That's a crazy good observation.
Not really picking up on that. never mind.
Yeah, awesome mini review. Thank you so much, Gina.
Yeah, thank you.
People who are not Gina, please. I'm assuming that you're already following her on Twitter. If you're not, what the hell, man? Just follow her on Twitter. You can find her. She is at GinaGuerrero1. That is one, the number. Thanks again, Gina. Next up, we have Davis of the Davis Principal fame. And Davis writes, these next few seasons are going to be tough to get through. We are entering the part of Who where almost every serial has most episodes missing. Oh boy. This is also William Hartnell's last full season. He regenerates a few episodes into season 4. Anyways, I should probably talk about Galaxy 4 now.
I found this serial disappointing, but not absolutely horrendous. In the beginning, it came very close to Web Planet 2. There were small round things, like the larvae gun, annoying loud beeps, and Vicky! his serial was not as long, nor was it as bad as the Webb Planet. It starts out with the Doctor landing on a planet that looks very similar to the planet in The Chase, Episode 1. Funnily enough, the planet is not in Galaxy 4. That is where the Drava are from. Anyways, Vicky sees a little round robot that she randomly decides to call a Chumbly. Everyone else in the serial also calls them Chumblies, despite the fact that the real ship already have their own name.
So true. And we didn't pick up on that. The reels must clearly have a name for them.
We said that, didn't we?
Did we? But yes, absolutely, totally freaking agree with you, dude.
Name them something, otherwise, like, what are they going to, how are they going to refer to them? Unless, oh yeah, that's what I meant by maybe Chumblies is such an inherently appropriate name for them.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Phil's chose that name too by sheer coincidence, yeah.
Anyway, awesome observation. Davis goes on, however, these Chumblies are dangerous, so the Drava save everybody by putting a mesh net on top of the Chumbly. This net gets stuck when 5 people pull on it, but another Chumbly shortly comes by and pushes it off with a stick thing. I made the same observation!
Yes, you did.
Anyways, the Drava say the Rills are horrible people. Predictably, the Drava are bad and the Rills are good. The Rills were shot down by the Drava, so the Doctor and Vicky help them repair their spaceship. Episode 4 is filled with fighting, which is utterly useless when we only have sounds. Finally, the Davis principle is lifted, and the Doctor and crew go past a planet, which Vicky is oddly curious about. Why would she want to know about some random planet? Ugh.
To conclude, after watching this serial, I have to say it was not great. However, a lot of the serials are meant to be viewed, so the junking policy severely hurt the serial. I have to give this serial a 1.0, simply because I found it boring. Though, I do think it's interesting how the Darvo were written. To me, they sort of seem precursors to Cybermen with their lack of emotion and choice. In conclusion, I, shockingly, did not love this episode. I'm not looking forward to the 80-ish missing episodes.
I am shocked.
80-ish.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, now so are you.
Color me shocked.
Davis, thank you so much for an awesome review. I like that. That's a very good observation. The whole, like, mindlessness or, sorry, not mindlessness, actually, the sort of the lack of emotions on the part of the Chiquita Bananas when you now have the Cybermen who are very much the same. They're just soldiers with no heart whatsoever, just boom, 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 following orders and killing. Crazy, crazy awesome. And okay, so far, 2 for 2, gotta say, very much on the same page with you guys.
Yeah, definitely.
People who are not Davis, follow him on Twitter. That is a Drawin order. He is at Shrubther, all in one word. Next
you
up.
Don't have Twitter, just follow him. Address will be in the show notes.
Before we move on to the next mini review, yes, there are, I haven't actually counted them, but I guess, yeah, roughly 80 more missing episodes. For the record, let it be known, Rawmeister, I feel incredibly bad that you've started right now. Next up, we have Gallifreyan Buccaneer. How you doing, dude?
I feel I should reply to that.
Half expecting you to.
So, Galaxy 4, more like Galaxy Bore. Not much to say about this serial, really. It's very standard Base Under Siege, Hartnell fare. Originally written for Ian, Barbara and Vicky, Stephen gets lumped in with a mix of Ian lines and the more 60s female lines. Not great on his second proper outing.
Very true. The Chumblies, possibly the cutest name for a Doctor Who villain, never sell the idea of being threatening, even if we're only meant to consider them antagonists for the first 2 episodes. Robert Cartland's real voice, however, is much more fun to listen to, very much conveying the peaceful nature of his race, but menacing enough that you could see them as a tangible threat.
Much like Vincent Price.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Space Nazis, the Draven, are led by Marga, who Stephanie Bidmead plays well enough, the standout moment being her speech in the 3rd episode. The Doc is selfish as ever, but does give sympathy to the Rill, despite their appearance. I wouldn't really call this character development, but it's nice to see him acting in a more doctory way.
Very true. Fair point. Gallifreyan Buccaneer concludes, overall a bland serial. I'd give it a 1.9, only so high due to the subversion of who the antagonists are, even if you can see it coming a mile off. P.S. He adds a P.S. I feel like I need to read this out, otherwise it gets very meta. He adds, P.S. I feel bad for the Rawmeister jumping in with the awesome time medal and now being trudged down Recon City. Stay strong.
Well, I appreciate that. I thought myself too. I will stay strong. Well, I will become strong. I don't know if I've been strong yet. I will pump iron for them.
You pump iron.
Yeah.
Awesome review, Gallifrey and Buccaneer. Thank you very much, Mr. Buccaneer, sir. People who are not Gallifrey and Buccaneer, follow him on Twitter. He is Alan R. Trussler. That's Alan with a U. And lastly, we have a mini/maxi review from Kyle Rath. Kyle, how you doing, dude?
Shall I just jump into the review?
Go for it.
Okay. Up until a couple of years ago, this serial was largely lost. Fortunately, we now have almost half an hour of the moving picture creamy goodness that is Galaxy 4. He adds that as sarcasm. Following the high-spirited adventure facing off with the meddling monk, the Doctor, Stephen and Vicky arrive on an unnamed planet with three sons and some long-deserved, undeserved rest. Ah, good call. The three sons don't factor into the story. I guess one son just isn't hipster enough. Thanks to the pointless wank writer William Ems. Yes, that William Ems. That's more tough.
He goes on. The gang meets two groups stranded on the planet. The Drowin, a cadre of genetically similar beach blanket bimbettes, whose race only keep a minimum amount of males around back home for essential services. Their leader, Marga, is a total nut job. Source, her monologue in the episode Airlock. Bitch be cray cray!
The Rills, ammonia-swilling good old boys, akin to the cousins of the huts of Tatooine, who happily offer to help anyone that wants it, though through the use of blind mechanical beehives that Vicky then, apparently everyone, including their inventors, refer to as Psy Chumblies.
Long story short, despite some confusion over who shot first, it was always Han, by the way. Marga and her sisters, in an attempt after 400 dawns to escape from the soon-to-explode-for-no-reason planet, try to petition Docadal to steal the working Rill spaceship. Steven sacrifices his freedom and stays with the Drowin, while Doc and Vicky try to chase down a plausible and concise ending to this serial.
He concludes with a quick story summary. Don't judge an alien by its squishy, poisonous atmosphere.
Number two, Steven is an idiot, though he does smack a bitch down to escape. So that happened.
Number three, keep Vicky away from anything that involves naming, identifying, labeling, etc., or else you fucking get chumblies, for fuck's sake.
Number four, apparently, if you're a cold-hearted bitch intent on killing anyone to save your life, the Doctor is fine with leaving you behind on an exploding planet. Just saying, hardcore.
Number five, stop wondering what's happening on the next random planet, Vicky. I'd like to know why we had to sit through 80 minutes of this fucking exploding unnamed planet that is nowhere near Galaxy 4, whatever the hell that's supposed to be.
He says, this gets a 1.5, spot on, dude. It was a poorly written script with very little of its own inertia to get going, but mostly due to the fact that William Hartnell appeared to give absolutely no fucks at all in this serial, so why should I? Refreshingly, the TARDIS worked perfectly the whole episode. A potentially great concept for TV executed badly is still bad TV, no matter how tight the pants are.
And adds, besides, the BBC had to rub one off once in a while, hence one-offs. Not really, but it's a good story.
And he concludes, This is it. This is what I was mentioning before. He concludes with a list of, he says, some alternate, more relevant titles to consider. Go for it, dude. One each. Okay.
Shit's about to get real.
Aqua Team Chumbly Force.
A nice piece of building.
The one where that planet exploded with some people on it that no one cared about.
And Stepford 3000. What's your favourite?
Shit's about to get real.
I've got to agree.
Yeah, that's a winner. We have a winner. I quite liked our Kill Rill as well.
Yeah, that was also very good.
Kyle, awesome review as always. Thank you very much. And people who are not Kyle, follow him on Twitter. He is at Sinister Super Spy. That's super without any vowels. Hello from my past, future, and your presence past, I guess. Pumpkin here. Just need to interject something. It turns out we'd received two more minis that somehow, for some reason, we missed out. And, in fact, on that note, if at some point you've sent in a mini and we haven't read it out loud on the show or even acknowledged it or anything, then you have my most sincere apologies. Maybe it got stuck in the spam filter, or maybe I was just being stupid that day. I don't know. But if that is the case, then I am sorry. If that's not the case, though, I freaking retract my apology. Yeah. I've done nothing wrong here. Anyway, for your listening pleasure, the first of these two minis comes from JD. JD says, the Doc, Steven, and the other one land on a planet where it's beauty versus the beast, and, unsurprising plot twist, it's beauty that's evil. We get our next version of fake Daleks in the Chumblies. Vicky should never get to name anything. And sadly, 100 minutes that could be better spent doing almost anything else. The good. Without the airlock episode, it was awful. And now that's been recovered, you could at least get a feeling of the episode. Vicky gets locked up, but sadly rescued. And I like the episode titles. You can tell that I'm stretching here. 400 Dawns, The Exploding Planet, which sound like Russell T. Davis scripts. Yes, that is true, JD, but yeah, I can tell that you're stretching. Anyway, he goes on. The bad. The Drawins are so dated, it's not even funny. It's like someone took people from Coronation Street and dropped them in Doctor Who by mistake. And Galaxy 4 is a silly name. Whereas Galaxy 1, 2, 3, numbering them is a bit ridiculous. Oh, hello, Vaporub. We've landed in Galaxy 371,218,915. What excitement! He concludes, overall, Vicky's irritation index is low this time, at a 2.1, mainly since she gets locked up. It's not a lost classic like Evil, Power, or Master Plan, it's just lost. And it may be improved by having the missing episodes, but I don't think it's going to get much better even with all the visuals. Weirdly, not the worst episode of Doctor Who so far. Clue, it contains zombies. Very, yeah, I agree with that. And not the worst episode yet to come. Clue, it's got metal in it. But it is a disappointment. He gives it 1.3 out of 5. JD, holy crap, we are in like pretty serious agreement here. That is an awesome review. And what can I say? Great minds think alike, fake Daleks and whatnot. Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, if you happen to not be JD, don't worry. Don't panic. We're going to fix this. Here's what you do. Open up Twitter and look up at Marius Kane, that's Kane with a K, and give him a follow. I followed him, and my life's so much better now. Okie dokie. JD, thank you very much. Next up, we've got Steven, aka SGamer82. Hey Steven, how you doing, amigo? Ladies and gentlemen, I hate to quote the proverbial she, but Steven's got a long one. I just read it a moment ago though, and it is well worth it. Steven says, in Galaxy 4, Team TARDIS are caught in the middle of a conflict between the blonde bombshell Drawins and the unseen Rills, who act through their robot servants as they race to escape a dying planet. Gee, I wonder who the bad guys will be. Well, the answer may surprise you, as it takes only a few minutes of interaction with the Drawins to realize that the emphasis should probably be on bombshell. They are almost unthinkingly hostile towards the Rills. Even their immediate description in the audiobook gives you an idea of their nature. In contrast, once we meet the Rills, we learn that one reason they hide their appearance is because they know it to be frightening to other races, and they don't want to scare them. They have also been trying to offer aid to the Drawins from Dawn 1. Even their interaction with the Rills' robot is telling. Within the first 5 minutes, Vicky affectionately dubs them Chumblies. The Drawins only ever refer to them as machines, where the Rills quickly adopt Vic's nickname when referring to them in conversation. In fact, we never learn if the Rills even have a proper name for the Chumblies. Yeah, dude, you're in good company. A lot of people made that point. Good observation. He goes on, while writing this review, it occurred to me that the Drawins are almost Dalek-like in their automatic hostility and paranoia regarding the Rills. Of course, they never could have used Daleks for this story, excluding the fact that Team TARDIS would never willingly aid Daleks, as happened in the first half of the story. It would have destroyed the theme of the beautiful aliens being evil and the hideous ones being good. It would just have been the Daleks with uglier thals. Yeah, that's pretty nice. It was that stark difference that made me particularly like this serial. Listening to the Drawin leader, Marga, be so suicidally hostile towards the Rills makes you wonder what her society is like, that she can't see that an offer for help is just that, an offer for help. Also on the note of suicidal is how Marga gets the best, most reliable weapon, even though she's not regularly in the field. On the flip side, you can't help but feel for her as she is so literally surrounded by idiots. What does it say about a society when blind robots are more reliable than soldiers bred specifically for that purpose? My initial rating on the episode was a 3.5. While I liked the story, I had felt that it suffered from being pure audio, much like you said in your reviews of Marco Polo. Yes, you're right, that is exactly what we said in Marco Polo, specifically because it means we never saw the Rills and how frightening their appearance was meant to be. However, after listening to another Lost episode audiobook, The Underwater Menace, I have since revised that to a 3.8. At the end of The Underwater Menace, spoiler alert, there was an interview with Annika Wills, companion Polly, which reminded me that the fact that the story is almost purely audio means that we can picture the Rills to be however hideous we want them to be. So the effect I felt missing is actually still there, if not enhanced, thanks to our own imaginations. Again, contrary to your own general opinion of her, I liked Vicky just fine in this serial. Among other things, she provided one of the story's funnier moments to me, in which she responds to the Doctor's admonishments about throwing a rock at a Chumbly by repeating his instructions on how to observe one, word for word, then finishing with, "And then I threw the rock." Finally, am I the only one who thought of the Keys of Marinus and its acid lake when Stephen, early in the story, talked about wanting to take a swim? Sweet buttery Moses, I think you might be. You're a genius. I had not made that connection. That's a fantastic observation. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've seen this serial, if you've seen Keys of Marinus, think about this parallel. Add a comment to Stephen's mini-review on the website and let him know what a freaking genius he is, or, you know, if you disagree, then say that as well, but can't see how you would. Stephen, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for your mini. Ladies and gentlemen, here's what I want you to do. Do you have a passport? Do you have an ID card? Do you have a company ID badge or entry card? Do you have a university library card? Get it. Look at it. What's the name on there? Does it say Stephen, aka SGamer82? It doesn't? That is awesome. That makes you eligible for the following. Follow Stephen on Twitter. He is at SGamer82. That's 82, the number. Steve, thank you again. Now let's get back to my past. Okie dokie, that concludes our review of Galaxy 4. Thank you very much for listening. The next time we do a classic review, we will be regaling you with observations about, what was it called again?
Mission to the Unknown.
Kablamatron. Looking forward to seeing that. That actually looks pretty badass.
How much of that is available?
I'm not going to tell you just yet.
That's, sounds like good news.
Okay. The next audiobook review is going to be Orbis. Check that out. Paul McGann, very cool. Our next new review is going to be N004, Aliens of London. Spoiler alert, we've already recorded both Aliens of London and World War III, so those are going to be released at very, very quick succession. So yeah, please, oh my goodness, have a look around, listen to all of our podcasts, do like us on Facebook. We are at facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Follow me on Twitter. I am at Ponkin. The Rawmeister is not on Twitter, but if you like, send in messages through the website to coerce him into joining. And sure, please do keep sending in your mini reviews. We love reading them. Leave a rating and review on iTunes and yeah. Okie dokie. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you in the next episode.
Kablamo.
Fair. Have it. Shamalama ding dong, people.
I steal your catchphrase until I come up with one of my own.
Feel free. That's what Flapjack did. yeah, be right next to each other. Ciao. Oh, shit. I wasn't recording that. I'm kidding.
We should leave that in at the end.
Who back when?